Hello and welcome back to the official Scottish Rugby Podcast. On the show this week, Mossy, Al and I reflect on the Rugby World Cup 2019 final between South Africa and England. We look back on all the action from the Guinness Pro 14 for Edinburgh and Glasgow Warriors. But our main feature this week is looking ahead to the Fosroc Super 6 Championship, which launches this weekend. Gents, back-to-back weeks at Scotland, we're here again. The home of Glasgow Warriors, purely down to Al's schedule. He's a very busy man.
That's nonsense.
He doesn't like to travel through to BT Murrayfield as much as...
Four times this week.
Four times?
So it's good of you to come through once.
Now, are you a podcast guy, audiobook, music? What's your travel plans?
A bit of both. So I've actually started listening to TalkSport a lot more. And then I'll listen to the odd podcast as well. I was on a train yesterday, so I did the train yesterday... and I'll drive tomorrow, so it depends what I'm doing. See, when I'm on the train, to be honest, it's good for emails. You end up just sitting flicking through all your emails, either early in the morning or after anybody sending them. So just trying to keep myself entertained in the commute, Jamie.
Moss, what about you? What's your usual?
Mixed bag, really. I won't really do many podcasts. I'm more a radio man.
I don't think you should say that. I think you should say, you're an avid podcast listener and
I know, but I've said it
listen
now.
To Scottish Rugby podcast.
Can't take it back now.
I've said it now.
It's out there.
I'm just being, I'm a flicker. I would never choose one station, keep it on. I'll just say between here and Edinburgh, I could be flicking back and forward 15, 20 times, just something that catches my ear.
So it doesn't take much for me to lose interest in a radio station. So if somebody says something that I don't like or a song comes on I don't like, it's gone.
Yeah, I'm a bit like that.
And I'll either change radio stations or I'll just put music on.
You know, I think that, you mentioned TalkSport. Is that mostly football still, TalkSport? Has it got a bit of rugby now as well?
Kieran Bracken on this morning talking about
Saracens
troubles from a man who's played over 200 games for Saracens. But he was open about that. He says, look, I'm an ex-Saracen. So... that was interesting, Alan Brazil and Ali McCoy talking to Kieran Bracken about what's going on down there. So it's not just football, there's a talk sport that's got a bit of sport in it.
Well, no, but traditionally I used to listen to it and it just was
predominantly football. Yeah.
And that's why I'm not a huge football fan, so I never... but I think maybe they also had the World Cup rights, did they not, 1 year as well in 2000 and...
It's a bit of 2015, I think, yeah. They had updates and stuff this time around as well. So
yep.
That's a big sporting event, really, a massive sporting event, really. So
And on that note, it's all over now. The Rugby World Cup has ended. The ninth one, the first one in Asia, ended last weekend. Gents, thoughts on the final between England and South Africa?
Difficult to remember. I'm sure I predicted South Africa last week.
Here he goes.
No, I didn't see that coming. After the semi-finals... England were so good in that semi-final, but South Africa were much, much better. Controlled the game brilliantly and scored. England will be disappointed with a couple of tries, like defensively, but South Africa, I thought they were brilliant.
Yeah, it was good, wasn't it? Somebody reminded me afterwards that I must have said beforehand that South Africa would win the World Cup. I can't really remember.
I think you did.
Nonsense.
I think I changed my mind after being at the New Zealand South Africa group game, because I thought New Zealand hadn't really picked their strongest side, and then I thought actually. I'm going to go back and I think New Zealand, I think this may be the final, and I think New Zealand will probably pick a different team that will have more experience that would win over in the final. And I think I also said that the team that would win it would likely lose a pool game at some point as well.
You did, so I do remember that. Credit to you, because
I changed my mind about three or four times in between.
Well, I remember the pre New Zealand South Africa conversations, and you were talking. I think you also thought that South Africa would win that first game.
I thought they would win it, and then
New Zealand were dominant in that first game, and you were a wee bit humming and hawing. But yeah, I remember
but the final itself, I thought the couple of brilliant things for me was South Africa actually had far more balance to their game in terms of how they played, and they didn't kick quite as much. Everybody assumes that you know what South Africa are going to do because they usually do. What they do, and it's like kick hard and run hard and be very kind of organised and structured and a simplistic game plan, really. But and because they're so big and physical, if you know it's coming, you've got a better chance of dealing with it. But I think what they did was they moved the point of attack, they kicked less, they moved it to the width a wee bit, they had more through their midfield. So therefore, England didn't really know where the power was coming from, and that just depowers the defence, because if you're set and ready, because you have to be set and ready for these massive South African men, but because it was England weren't quite sure where they were playing, because it was a bit more balanced to the game, I think it was far more effective. And the other thing I thought was brilliant was, for all the I suppose the science and the detail that goes into the game now, and how deep the game's analysed, and how, as players, as coaches, as spectators, as pundits, whatever, it was actually something really basic that underpinned the win. And it was like, England's basics were poor. Like, their set piece was poor.
Set piece for me.
Bad decision making. And it was just like, for all the kind of screeds and screeds and screeds of depth and data and science, it was the basics done well that won the World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, the set piece was just, there was so much more to the game, clearly, but the scrum, five penalties, I think South Africa managed to get. It was kind of parity at the end. England got one penalty. If you're South Africa at that point, you're kicking yourself, because that's a lack of concentration when that happens, when you've been so dominant. But the line out as well, so it was two or three key steals. Well, all of a sudden England needed the ball, they needed to be able to control it, play themselves into the game. And, you know, so South Africa, 4 second rows involved in that game, two in the bench. And that 6-2 split, that was clearly, with hindsight, was incredibly smart, because it meant they could bring the physicality and the line out pressure and set piece pressure throughout the whole game.
And the injuries that South Africa got.
Well, that was it. Eh?
You know, it was in those positions where Diaga, wasn't it? Was it Mostert, Diaga? They both got in Estebet. There was two or three injuries.
He looked as if he was going to go, but he stayed on.
He stayed on. Diaga went off.
Diaga did shoulder early doors.
So having that experience in those positions, it's a bit fortunate, obviously. But another thing was, like, there's a lot of chat around how England played. I don't think we know how England tried to play or what they planned to do, because they didn't really have enough momentum or enough control of possession to actually show people what they'd planned and what they tried to do. So it was a kind of role reverse from the week before for England. And I think that what it meant to South Africa and the way they kind of won the game and what it represents, I think was really quite inspiring.
And the 32-12 victory for South Africa over England, it's the biggest Rugby World Cup winning margin since when, gents?
Need your book, Jamie. I don't
87?
Nope.
99,
Australia,
France.
Yeah, so France were beaten 35-12.
Which one's bigger?
The 20-point margin victory. This one. That one, I think.
That one's bigger, right, okay.
It's funny, do these things matter?
Size of the victory?
Yeah.
No.
No. And... yeah, because, I mean, England could easily have stopped playing. And that last try, as well finished, came from England, forced into an error from the defence. But, I mean, if you're worried about size of victory, you know, you would go away for your own 22 and change. You know what I mean? I don't think these things are that important. But I suppose it underlines how dominant South Africa were in the day.
Another stat for you, because I know you like them. It's England failed to score a try for the first time at the whole World Cup in that match as well. So... they scored a try in every other game apart from the final.
In every World Cup game they've played in?
No, in 2019 Rugby World Cup. Do you want more?
If you've got more, we might get a talking point in one of them.
No, you're all right then.
No, give us more. What else you got? No, you've run out, haven't you? You've said you want more and now you're panicking because you don't have any more.
Let's talk about the head coach, Erasmus. He was at Munster. He decided to leave, you know, take up a job in South Africa. I think he made himself... director of rugby and then appointed himself his head coach.
Yeah,
a very brave decision, but it's paid off dividend. What do you think about him as a coach and his style and what he's brought to the national team?
You can't argue with it. He's world champion, he's won a rugby championship. South Africa, and probably heard more about it just in the kind of latter stages. There's so many challenges in South Africa as a country, and rugby is so massive that there's an opportunity there to kind of galvanise a nation. And we've seen it before, so in 95. And they're talking, hopefully, that this will do it again. So you've got to give credit to the man, not just for his rugby vision, but for the vision, the bigger piece as well, and the story that South Africa tell through their victories. There's undoubtedly a fantastic story, and a fantastic story that's got a brilliant, I was going to say ending. It's not an ending. They can't let it be an ending. They've got now World Championship champions and have gone through that whole tournament in a great manner, conducting himself brilliantly. So, I mean, you can't say enough good things about him, can you?
He worked in South African rugby before coming, obviously, to Munster. And South African rugby, we all know, is dictated by physicality. And you know, think of some of the amazing players I've had in the past, like smaller players like Brayton Paulson, Brent Russell. And I always thought when I was playing against these guys, thank goodness they don't get the ball that often because they're so sharp. But it was always skinny, physical first. And that's just a mentality. But I think having coached overseas, Erasmus kind of picked up a little bit of that with the balance that was needed. And he didn't see too much in the World Cup, but World Player of the Year, Peter Steph Detoy, in the Rugby Championship, developed this really good offloading game. So he's an amazing back row player, but he was in the outside channels offloading. And I think bits of what Rassie Erasmus picked up overseas, maybe not exclusively, but I think it probably added a bit more balance to how he can see the game being successful. So it's not just that really South African mentality of being, you know, completely route one the whole time and aggressive. It was to get to the final, but I think in the biggest game, which was obviously the final, he did add that balance. And I think he maybe learned some of that from coach. I mean, he was the coach of the Munster team that you guys beat in the final, wasn't he, in Pro 14? So was he 3 or 4 years at Munster?
Two, three years, I think.
SOS to get him back. So I think his time over here helped him. But a brilliant person, a brilliant ambassador for the sport. And there's a lot of pressure in that job, but he spoke really well about pressure before and after the game. And he's got his reward from, you know, from really, there wouldn't be many people who'd have thought South Africa would have gone and achieved that in such a short time from where they were, you know, pretty low down 2 or 3 years ago. When it was it like one rate of 20%?
I was struggling. They were in a bad place. Now, we've talked to Brish Mossy a few times. How does he do that? Does he do that by developing players? You know, giving players more skills through the training that allow them to make smarter decisions on the park? Or is that guys, here's your list of tactics, this is what we're going to do? What's your thoughts on that?
It depends on your players, I think. But I think South Africa, you've got a depth of player that you can almost, you'd imagine, select the player for how you want to play your game. But I think he's probably not done that. I think he's probably changed the way that some of the players play and changed the mindset
of some of the players.
And Peter Steph Letoy is a perfect example of that. I think he's brought stability at 9 and 10 as well. He changed the law around overseas players playing for South Africa, and kind of Faf de Klerk falls in there. Willie LaRue, who I didn't think had a particularly good tournament, but
sold enough in the final, though.
Sold enough in the final. His best game was the final, which signed a good player. You know, Francois Lowe from Bath.
Francois Lowe
coming off the bench. It's mind blowing. So I think stuff like that, he's created an environment that has allowed them to be successful with the hope that then inspires the next generation. But I do think he's changed the game a wee bit and aligned to what I was saying before, and a bit less confrontational at times, or always confrontational, but not only confrontational. You need to do that, you have to prove it works. And by winning, I think they won the series against England last summer, and then they won the Rugby Championship, then that proves to his players that the changes and the implications he's trying to change, or the things he's implementing, does work. And I think it's an easier sell. So it can't be without its challenges, any international coaching, especially that international coaching environment, but he's done it right.
I thought it's a loaded question. I mean, I agree with you. I think that it's clearly a balance, but he's empowered. For me, it looks as if he's empowered the players. The players, South African boys, they've got the skill set, and you know, everybody talks about them being big and physical, and yes, they are. I mean, as a nation, they've got huge rugby players to pick from, but good rugby players as well. And when I look at the difference between them, their semi-final and their final, it seemed to me as if there was almost more nerves in the semi-final. Mm-hmm. There was a reluctance to play rugby out with of the kind of safe comfort zone, because if they'd lost in the semi-final, that was a major failure. Now, getting into the final, it looked to me as if there was a wee bit more freedom. And now that's credit to, I believe, the environment he's created that week in particular, to say, guys, let's go out. Yeah, let's get some basics right, but let's not be scared to play a bit of rugby when it's on as well.
Or did he think that England were more physical than Wales, and thought he maybe, eventually we are 6-2 split, with the injuries that Wales had, with the kind of, I suppose, the drop in experience that Wales then had, especially front five around their bench, he maybe thought, right, that's where we'll go. And he maybe thought that tactic of just being overly confrontational for 80 minutes against England, they maybe wouldn't get the change.
That's the kind of the first question I was asking. Tactics are, there's bound to be a bit of both, isn't there? But I just felt as a group of players, now when the game's going well for you, that can happen. Actually, you feel good. You maybe give that off on an hour day you're hanging on to because you're worried about making a mistake. But they just looked as if they were out there in a relaxed mood. Now, that first 15 minutes of the game is crucial to that for any player. But they got the best out of every single player that took the park. Whereas England were pressurised. They were making mistakes they hadn't made all tournament. We got Toji missing the kickoff. That's not like him. He's normally up there gathering that and he'll drive the ball for a penalty. So the pressure in the game on England made them make mistakes, and the flip side of that, South Africa looked free. They looked as if they were in a great place for playing that game.
I suppose that's why it's called a sport, isn't it? Because there is an element of risk, chance, form, nerves, pressure, whatever it is. And that's why we tune in and watch. And we've probably covered everything. So yeah.
Thanks for listening. We're here at Scotland. Let's start with Glasgow. Great to see them get that big victory against the Kings last week, 50-0. I think you were at the game, Mossy. Were you here, Al, as well?
I was. We had a bunch of former players. So although I was here, I wasn't working. So we had Eric Milligans and Dougie Halls and Guy Perrotts and Callum Forresters and Graham Morrison's and Henderson. So 17 of the boys in. And it was brilliant. Great to see a few old faces. And we sat and watched the game through the firework haze. I don't know anybody was watching it. I don't know. I didn't see it on the telly, but live there was a firework display at Jordan Hill School, and all the firework smoke was blown over the top of the pitch.
You couldn't see it.
You couldn't see it. So I don't know if it was like on the park. Adam Hastings after the game used it as an excuse to up the stairs for some of his kicking. I think it was a bit tongue in cheek. But yeah, I mean, it was a surreal atmosphere because this haze was sitting over the top of the park. But you know, Glasgow did what they needed to do. They took their opportunities, and you know, probably could have been more. But you know, Glasgow needed that win. The Kings didn't perform well, and are struggling a wee bit. But a few boys coming back from World Cup duty and doing really well. So yeah, for Glasgow, it was an important win, and they've got to beat the team that's out there. And they took great opportunities and scored some great tries.
Yeah, good start to the game. Certainly clinical, exactly what we're looking for. And then the kind of game lost a bit of intensity, didn't it? When I think it was 20 odd points up after 20 minutes, 30 odd points up after 30 minutes, and then the game kind of lost a wee bit of intensity. So maybe the Glasgow coaches and players will be a wee bit frustrated that intensity didn't stay as difficult, but that means just even from a 50 points to nil win, there's actually quite a lot to work on and focus on to get better from. And the Kings were poor, and the game lost a bit of intensity in the second half, but some, as you say, Al, good individual performances from either players returning or players who've been here.
By golly, Cable, the 20-metre dash try scorer.
A decent finish, wasn't it?
Good finish, a good turn of pace.
Speaking of that, the dash, I remember you had one down here in the corner from, I think it was against Zebre, who they play next week, but I think you embellished it to say it was from 50 metres out, but it was from just in front of the 5-metre line. Do you remember it, the line out against Zebre?
I fell backwards.
Yeah, you fell over the line.
But I caught the ball and I think they thought it was going to be an overthrow, and I've caught it and I've landed and there's nobody behind me, so I started kind of stumbling backwards, and then I realised there's actually still nobody behind me, so I've kept running backwards and I fell over just the line and scored the try. I stood up, was generally embarrassed, and James Eddy came running up, he's laughing, he thought it was hilarious, which made me kind of half smile. So I scored that. You ever scored a try backwards?
I love how you refer to that as a dash. The backwards stumble.
It was a backwards stumble.
It was unique.
I don't think there's many backwards tries.
Nah, scored a backwards try
before? I kind of think of one.
No.
There you go. Prolific try scorer. Backwards try scorer.
Backward run. You can actually run quite quickly backwards.
Yeah, we saw Al do it. But that was
because his legs are on back to front.
That was against Zebre, yes. And that's who Glasgow will be playing away from home.
Oh, great!
Week.
That's a terrific line, nice, Jamie. You're very really good. You're almost professional.
This isn't my first rodeo. Zebre away next week. Now they're not won any games yet so far, but still a difficult place to go. Though you guys have both been there. What's it like to play Zebre at this time of year?
I've never played in Zebre.
Have you not?
No.
Sorry. You've never played in Zebre?
No, even when it was Aroni, I didn't play either.
No?
I played at home a few times, but I've never been to that wee stadium. Is it Parma?
I've played against you, really. So
it's a wet pitch, a heavy pitch, isn't it?
Yeah, really heavy.
At times
it can be very heavy. In fact, there was talk of the game getting called off one of the years we were there because the rain was coming down, and then eventually we got there and it was glorious sunshine. It's one of those reasons it had been raining all day, and then we just got a great window. So Glasgow should go away and win it. The added challenge is the travel, but it's less of a travel a challenge now. But when we first started going over there, it was different. So there'll be, I've not seen the Glasgow team, won't be out yet, but it's about making sure they get that part of it right now. Very experienced in doing that as well. Now that it's South Africa, more challenging as far as the travel's concerned than going to Italy. So, you know, Glasgow need to go over what Chris said about the fact that there's plenty to work on from this weekend. It's a good thing. You don't want to go over there and be too comfortable. So, you know, Dave Rennie and his team will be pushing the boys to make sure that the performances keep going up and up as, you know, players drip back in. I'm always reluctant to talk about the World Cup players coming back too much because actually the guys that have been there, they've earned the right. And one guy that stands out we talked about last week was Kieran McDonald. He had an terrific game at the weekend, got man of the match at the weekend, rightly so. He's dominating the line out. He makes me smile. I spoke to him after the game. I love the fact that if he's on, he calls the ball to himself. He doesn't waste any time throwing it to anybody else. If he's on, he calls the ball to himself. Now, I think that's quite a good tactic. I quite admire that. But he's carrying the ball exceptionally well. And he's playing well. So, you know, there's going to be selection challenges for Dave, which is a good thing to have.
I think that with Zebre, Michael Bradley is a coach, one of my former coaches at Edinburgh. And I remember speaking to Michael last year. I think it was actually here at Scotton when they came over to play Glasgow. And I was asking him, how's it going? What did he say? Well, listen, we have to play quickly. He says, we try and play a quick game. He says, it kind of, the initial thought from everyone is, oh, Italians, big forwards, heavy. He says, we're not big enough to play like that. We have to play quite an attack-based game. So that there should be opportunities for Glasgow. And saying that, Leinster went over there 2 weeks ago with a fairly mixed team, but with a lot of experience, just Scott Fardies and these guys still playing, and Joe Tamani, and it was a 3-0 win away from home. So
classic.
Leinster, you know, kicked one penalty. Ross Byrne, I think, kicked a penalty in the 21st minute, and that was it. So they've got a tough side to them as well, Zebre. But I think, I suppose, in essence, they want to try and play quite quickly. And if you put their skills under pressure, and if you get some physicality about it, it should be opportunities for Glasgow. And it's a game they'll hope to win, they'll look to win, and get two victories back to back after a difficult start.
Let's stick with Italy for the moment and move on to Edinburgh. Edinburgh were away to Benetton last week, and it was an 18-16 win for the Italian side. Not surprising, really. Benetton have really seemed to kicked on in the past.
They reached a kind of playoff qualifier, whatever, you know, effectively quarterfinal last year, didn't they? With built on their home performances and their home victories, and they are, you know, returning players like Bram Steen and these guys from the World Cup make a big difference. A lot of teams will go there and struggle to win, I think. But in saying that, there was opportunities for Edinburgh to win. Obviously, there's a couple of penalties towards the end of the game that just drifted left. I would kind of had a thought when I was watching at the time, and it's an interesting thought. I might be wrong. I probably will be wrong. But Edinburgh had like 5 minutes, 5:40, I think, of time, and when the clock had gone red at the end of the first half, most of which was on. It was all within 5 meters of the Benetton line, and then eventually they won a penalty and they opted to kick the 3 points. I think it was 15-10 at the time, so it was to 15-13. And I just wondered, as a defending team, you'd be quite happy for the opposition. And I know Edinburgh had 14 players, but the clock had obviously had gone red, and you could have gotten your player back on to up to 15. But I just wondered the statement, if you could have maybe taken a scrum there and scored. I know as if buts and maybe we'd had a more kind of powerful statement. It was wet, it was miserable conditions, but I thought maybe throw caution to the wind a wee bit there and try and make a statement with a 5 or 7 pointer.
The game's definitely moved towards that. You know, there's more teams will take those kicks to the corner or scrums and gamble the 3 points. We've said it a few times, Chris. You're point that you only get those 3 points when that's, it's actually over.
I mean, it was under the sticks, and then the guys had attacked for, I think it was 5 minutes 43 seconds with 14 men. You know, I mean, it was an incredible defensive effort. And, you know, the caveat that with there were opportunities to win the game later on in the match. So it probably was the right decision to take the three. But I just thought, I wonder if, as a defending player, holding out for so long and then only conceding three, I think it's quite a fill up for the defence. You're quite happy that the opt to kick the goal.
Edinburgh will be disappointed, but at the same time, well, you look back, Jamie, your points, but you look back for last season, and it's a difficult place to go and go. So to come back with that bonus point, you know, potentially at the end of the season, with hindsight, that'll be an important point. So it's good that an Edinburgh team's going there and being disappointed that they didn't win. But, you know, stepping back with a bit of clarity, maybe that point is a good result.
Looking ahead to Edinburgh's next fixture, will be against Dragons at home.
Chris once scored a try against the Dragons. And Edinburgh played the Dragons this week, Chris, so...
I'm not that good.
Come on.
I've got one.
Right,
got
good. One. Right.
Dean Ryan, you know Dean Ryan well from his time with Scotland. He's now with Dragons. They'll be facing Edinburgh at home next week. That's really loose.
No, that's not bad.
What do you mean of them so far in the Guinness Pro 14?
Well, they had the victory at home against Glasgow, didn't they? They're just behind Glasgow and Conference A, actually, sitting on 9 points, so five games, two wins. Some good young players, Tane Basham, the young back row players, catching headlines. They'll get some international players back. I think they're a tougher side to beat, as most teams are at home, than away. I think Edinburgh's home form has been terrific, and I think that'll continue this weekend, hopefully. But the Dragons, they'll be steely under Dean. You know, Dean's a hard taskmaster, and a lot of the game will revolve around set piece and basics.
We structured, won't he?
It'll be really structured.
He's very detailed in what he wants his players to do. But probably a reasonable analogy would be looking at Richard Cockerell, what he came in and did, as far as grabbing it back and saying, right, this is a rugby we need to play. And you see Edinburgh beginning to build on that and adding more facets to the play. But I think the Dragons are probably, you know, 2-3 years behind where Edinburgh were. But I think Dean Ryan will be a good asset for them, as far as, you know, just not overcomplicating the game of rugby, just making sure that their basics are as good as possible.
They'll be hard to beat. And but I do think Edinburgh's form at home, and some of the tries they scored against Scarlets 2 weeks ago, and even the try they scored over in miserable conditions against Benetton, shows that there's an attacking edge to them that's being developed. But yeah, Dragons are, they'll be a tough nut to crack. Some good young players, that maybe names that people don't know, and some returning players. There's a lot of penalties against the Dragons. They do concede a lot of penalties, which, you know, will be something that Edinburgh will be able to capitalise on, especially if your set piece is strong, your line it drive strong, it gives you field position to attack from. But that's Friday night, the BT Murrayfield.
2013 was when Dean was involved with Scotland, just for, I think, for one campaign, the Six Nations.
You still playing now?
Yeah, I was.
You were still playing. You played in the first game, but you were on the bench.
So on the bench for the whole championship.
Oh, were you?
Sorry. Grant Gilchrist got. I wasn't. I don't think I was far off being retired. not through my own choice. But Dean came in and I enjoyed working with him. Like I say, he's structured. He's got a real clear way of what he wants from you. But you know, he got good performances out of that us and that. In that championship, you would have worked with him at
Gloucester. Yeah, he was the head coach, director of rugby at Gloucester. So signed me to go down there, and he talks so well about the game of rugby. Like he's a big, aggressive, hard player, and sometimes you just imagine big, aggressive, hard players. He would only be big, aggressive, and hard, but like his detail and his understanding of the game was brilliant, and he actually wanted to develop a game that would. Can he tick all the boxes?
The lighthouse analogy. Did he have the lighthouse analogy?
One thing he did do, when I met him, I was completely sold, and like he really has got a real depth of rugby knowledge. But one thing he did that I thought was brilliant, and I've never seen any other coaches do it. He had this innate ability at half time or pre-match or in analysis to kind of like draw what he was thinking.
Yeah.
So he'd bring a flip chart, and he would be able to, whether it was a graph or whether it was a table or whether it was just a I don't know like a Pictionary type thing. He would be able to articulate where the game had to be played and what had to happen in almost like a diagram. And I know everybody learns in different ways, but for me, I thought it was brilliant. It gave a real clear picture, old-fashioned kind of whiteboard with a few circles and a few zigzags and a few quarters, and it made perfect sense. And I thought it was a really quite a strength to be able to sell your message in picture form when everybody's breathing out every hole, they've got a half time trying to listen, being kind of sold this or being informed and by this picture. I think was really good. Now it was something that I've never really seen other coaches do.
I remember that. I remember his diagrams. He had a lighthouse analogy as far as us building our foundations from the bottom up. He also had some reasonably complicated drills, I seem to remember as well. And a flashback to doing a drill in the dead ball area of the main pitch at BT Murrayfield, and Dana had explained it, and saying 75-80% of the boys had got it.
Who didn't?
Jeff Cross, you and Murray, running in the wrong direction, running into each other, picking a ball up. It was like watching, you know, you coach your kids, Mossy, and you're watching them, and it's like herding cats, they're running all over the place. And Dean went apoplectic. He was absolutely destroyed. He was convinced everybody should have known exactly what they were doing. And regardless of how many times we tried to do it, we kept getting it wrong. I'm sure Big Jim Hamilton had a few things to say about it as well.
Maybe not everybody learns through pictures, you
know. Well, saying that though, just reading there, Jim Hamilton was man of the match for the game against Ireland that you won in 2013 as well, at home. So something must have worked.
Was that
for
the
Jim
game where we had like 20% territory in possession?
I don't have those stats.
I know.
Big Jim played well under Dean. As I say, like Dean, like, done over complicated game, and that worked for Jim. He's not an overly complicated man, but he was. Get, like, he had certain tasks to do and he performed them really well, so he had a really good championship that year.
I have a few ding dongs with Richard Cockerell over the years as well, I'd imagine. So it'll be, I assume they'll be quite good mates, but they'll be quite competitive mates. I think either on the field and off the field to do coaching.
This weekend starts the Fosrock Super 6 Championship. It's been a long time coming, gents, but it's finally here. We're all looking forward to it getting going on Friday night. But before we talk about it, I just want to remind everybody of why Scottish Rugby has chosen to do this and the importance of Super 6 and what it will do for the club game.
We need a new club structure in Scotland because part of our structure is part-time professional and part of it is wholly amateur, and we've never really come to terms with a governance structure that allows both of those to exist properly together. It's a halfway house that pleases nobody. It's going to house the best part-time professional players all in six franchises across Scotland, so we're going to have a better playing environment for these players, playing in a higher standard, and they're going to come under our high performance function and come out of our domestic rugby orbit, so they're going to get better nutrition, better strength and conditioning, better physio, and obviously our head coaches will come from our professional programmes as well. So they're going to be in a hugely beneficial environment that allow them to be the best they possibly can.
So Mossy, I just heard from Chief Exec Mark Dodson there explaining the need for the Fosrock Super 6. And he mentioned not just the players, the coaches as well. You've had a look through some of the coaches that have been aligned to the team. There's a fairly good chunk of young coaches and hungry coaches that are going to be involved in Super 6, isn't there?
I think it's a great group. It's a group that's evolved a wee bit as well, just over the last kind of year or so. And kind of like Stevie Laurie, when opportunities have come up, you can see that this group of coaches are going to be looked at closely for developing through into the kind of professional parts of the game, or, you know, under-20s coach, all that side of things as well. A lot of ex-players, a lot of guys that both Chris and I played with over the years. Andy Kelly's a guy who's going to come into Heriot's. Phil Smith takes over as interim head coach at the moment. Andy Kelly comes back from Hong Kong. That's, for me, a great story. Not just in the coaches, but in the players as well. The amount of opportunities this has opened up for players and coaches to come back to Scotland to be able to work in a part-time professional environment, but an environment from a coach's point of view where they are leading that whole programme. They're building their squad, they're looking after their budget. The development in there will be absolutely fantastic. Guys at Stan, like Ben Cairns at Stirling, it'll be interesting to see how their style of rugby compares to what Ben's been doing as a head coach previously, and the same at Ayrshire Bulls with Pete Murchie. Like, Pete Murchie's a guy I know very well. He's really into his detail. So I'm intrigued to see how they come out and how they play. I think this weekend's going to be very interesting viewing.
You mentioned Ben Cairns there of Stirling, and late last week we caught up with Ben.
Look, I think initial impression, we've had sort of two pre-season hit outs, one against Watsonians and then a triangular against Barrymuir and Ayr, so we've already picked up three of the Super Six sides, so half our opposition, if you like, or more than half our opposition. So my immediate thing when we played Watsonians was physicality, definitely gone up a notch, which is good. That's, you know, if I look at where the Premiership was and how we better support the pro team, that was a major factor, was that physicality within the game. So that's taken a step up, and that's down to the boys' conditioning and putting more hours into the gym and being a bit better Nick that way. Skill level, I think we're starting to see that as game plans come together and guys are starting to get on the same page. Speed of the game, we would hope, would be higher. I think we've seen that in patches, but again, it's been tough through pre-season because guys are at different stages. You're alternating who's on the pitch at the same time, so it's hard to see those combinations, and you're not really sure what the opposition are doing in terms of that at the same time, so that's hard to tell. But certainly initial thoughts would be physicality's upped, that pace and certainly skill level looks like it's gonna create a sort of real step up in intensity for Super Six.
Yeah, like there's a lot of players that have played Premiership rugby, obviously, and there's a lot of players aligned to academies. There's up and coming players coming through, and I was just really I'm really looking forward to this weekend just to see what the standards like and what the performances are like. I don't think we need to make snap judgments after one weekend, but I'm really looking forward to it. And when I had a look through the squad, there's some pretty talented older and pretty talented younger players, and I had a look at just like some examples. Really, I don't really just reel off a massive big long list, but if you look at Watsonians first, for example, you've got something like Jamie Hodson, who's a young player who's played a lot for Edinburgh of late, second row, and he would kind of jump out as one of the young players in the forwards. And then somebody who's not old but a kind of more experienced player like a Ross Graham, a hooker, for Watsonians. So there's a couple of names right away that would jump out. Backs, Ewan Fox is a young 12 who's a really attack minded player, plays a bit of standoff, been involved with the academy, and then somebody like Lee Miller is an experienced number 10. So that kind of gives you a flavour of kind of what Watsonians, I mean, amongst ours, as I say, 30 odd men squad, so it is really important. But yeah, I find it hard just to sit and read out a list, but I could, you know, because there's so many good players.
It's a balance as well, though, isn't it? It's the balance of experience. It's just, rather than go back to the coach has been able to build a squad that has. You're not, well, I was going to say you're not going to win anything just with young kids, but I think somebody said that before. But you need to have some of these experienced guys coming in as well.
I mean, if you look at, I will go through, I've picked out kind of players that just ones to watch effectively, and they're all players to watch. But on that point, say at Ayrshire Bulls, you take the back line, you've got Davey Armstrong, scrum half, who's made Ayr tick over the last few years, hard. Can he knows scrum half, who knows the game, and you've got somebody like Ollie Smith, the young 13-stroke fullback, under-20s player who's got a presence and a great line break and a good kicking game. And so there's your example there, just across the back lines for Ayrshire. For Heriot's rugby, again, you've got somebody like an experienced, I like Jack McLean as a player, the back row player, Scott Riddell has got to be there with a bit of experience. And then a Jack Blaine, who we know a little bit from performances for Edinburgh, but Charlie Jupp's a young second row as well, who's in the academy there. So learning from each other, I think the assumption is that young players can only learn from old players, but the older guys can learn from the younger players coming in as well, because they've just approached it in a different way. So I see a real depth of player and talent. Not to be outdone, we'll move on to Stirling. Less experience, I think, in the Stirling County squad, more kind of up and coming young players that jump to mind. You do have Rainer Kennedy, the hooker's got a bit of experience. Cammy Henderson's a young second row again. A few second rows coming through, Al, actually.
Yeah.
They've inspired.
Inspired.
Not by me.
Sean Kennedy. Sean Kennedy would be maybe an experienced head in that Stirling County. It's a partnership agreement, isn't he? I think with Glasgow Warriors. So Sean, in that important role as a scrum half, could be one of the experienced guys in there. But try to give a flavour of the players that, if you know Scottish rugby and your club game and the age group game, you'll have seen these players perform pretty well over the years. Jordan Edmonds, Barrymuir Bears, scored tries year after year. at all levels, club international, strong runner, obviously Boroughmuir in the Premiership. He's there. Scott McGinley's a good back row player who's youngish, but he's been there for a while. And you've got like a young Rufus McLean coming in who's been blighted a bit with injury over the last year or so, but played a few games for Watsonians last year at the start of the season, really starred, you know, a young academy player. And then Southern Knights have, I would say, probably got a wee bit less experience again. Somebody who jumps out with loads of experience, a couple of guys, Craig Jackson, Fraser Thompson, again, have experience at the club game and success in the club game. And we've got like a young Rory Darge in the back row who's a quality player. So I know that's a kind of long list of names without too much context, but I just, when I look through the squads and I look at what some of the older players, not necessarily older in age, I might be getting shouted at, I'm only 24, I'm only 25 or whatever, but the more experienced players and some of the younger players, I think that sums up exactly what the Fosrock Super Six should be. A competitive environment where there's an opportunity for those who want to develop and with similar mindsets and similar ambitions are given a platform to do so.
Yeah, and don't forget, you can get involved and get down to the clubs to watch the games live, or you can check out our coverage of the games, because the Fosrock Super Six tournament will have its opening season broadcast live simultaneously on both the BBC Sport Scotland website and Scottish Rugby TV. Also, every Super Six team will have at least 3 live broadcast matches with highlights from all other fixtures of each tournament round available online at scottishrugby.org. But I'm hearing there's some big numbers going down to the opening game on a Friday night between Boroughmuir Bears and Stirling County at Megaland.
I think it's brilliant. Beginning of the week, I heard over 1,000 tickets already sold for Boroughmuir Bears game. So that's great. Like, the more people can down and take that in, I think it's a fantastic televised game, an opportunity, and a Sunday afternoon takes me back to Rugby Special. But to sit and watch what will be a good game of rugby, and I think the profile opportunities for these I was going to say young players, for all the players coming through, really important. And we can see how strong that is. You know, it makes it more visual for all Scottish rugby fans to be able to take in how strong that group of players, that league is going to be.
A really random, open-ended question now, but do you think, and it's totally hypothetical, I understand, but do you think the star players from, or the players who stand out, say, in week one, I don't know, with snap judgments, will be the more experienced guys who've played Premiership rugby over the last 3, 4, 5, 6 years, or the young players who are maybe been involved in age grade stuff? What do you? So yeah, mix. Obviously, it's a total poll, but like, who do you think will adapt quickest to the new format?
So it'll be interesting from a player's point of view and from a team point of view. Will it be the traditional, the teams who have been winning the Premiership for the last 2 or 3 seasons, or will we see somebody else coming through as a bit of a bolter? From a player's point of view, it's probably down to the individual. If I was to look back on it, and the pathway I went through, I went from Alan Glens to Stirling County to then try and push on and get that professional contract. For some of the players, that's what it'll be about. It's that platform to move on. For others, it's just about playing rugby to the best of their ability, at the top level they can play at. So there's all sorts of motivations in there. Some young lads clearly with an eye moving up, and other guys just looking to make their club, their franchise, as strong as possible. I'm assuming you're excited about it. I think it'll be brilliant.
Anything new creates an interest, but there's such an interest, and say it again, you don't really want to make judgments after one game or one weekend, but I do think there's a genuine interest into what will happen, who will play well.
How old were you when you signed professionally?
21.
So you look at that.
I did 3 years with Gala, 3 years in senior rugby.
Yeah.
Over 100 odd games or whatever in senior rugby before turning professional. And then one thing I was going to say, as you were talking about there, that when I asked you that question, again, it's maybe unrelated to Fosrock Super Six, but what age do you think you could be before you turn professional? Like, how old do you think you could be before you turn professional? Could a 25, 26-year-old guy still
come I'd like to think so. So I think by guys like John Welsh was playing late at GHA and came through reasonably late in comparison, that we're not a big enough country, we don't have enough players to let anybody slip through the net. So this, maybe some guys that have gone through are 20, 25, 26 years old now and have missed the kind of first opportunity, will have a chance to step up and we'll move on. I'm reluctant to say that as well, because it's not just what it's about. Yeah. Like, it's not just about developing. Clearly, there's a massive development part to it, but there'll be guys in there who are the standard, because it's compressed to six, well, undoubtedly go up straight away. Probably not. It'll take a bit of time to bed in. These are new teams, new coaches.
They've had a lot of time to prepare, though.
They have had a lot of time to prepare. I think, sorry, going back to your previous about how late you can be, it's how young you can be as well. Yeah. Like, when I turned professional, I was 20, and it definitely took me 2-3 years to get up to speed physically. Now, these guys are coming out now at 17, 18 years old of academies or school systems or club systems, and physically they're just about ready. Mm-hmm. Like, I look back at guys like Stuart Hogg coming in, who it used to be just outliers. It used to be guys like Ross Ford who came in and you're like, wow, he's ready. But now it's a norm. Mm-hmm. But this, for me, 17, 18, 19-year-olds, it's a brilliant platform for them to move into. A bit like my pathway into Stirling County. I can see a lot of these guys getting picked up young into the Foss Rock Super 6.
Yeah, and speaking of 17, 18-year-olds, if you're under 18, you can go to these games for free. For more information, check out scottishrugby.org.
And then we call this podcast Jamie's Links. I mean, it's been terrific, Jamie.
It's been very good today, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think you've really...
I mean, one might just have been natural as well. Did that just come to you? Or do you have that written down?
Sometimes it's just there. I can't really explain it. It's just, you've either got it or you haven't. You know what I mean? It's just... Yeah, it just kind of happens.
Mate, you are hot today. Well done.
Cheers, Al. Anyway, that's all from us this week on the official Scottish Rugby podcast. We'll be back next week with more exclusive chat here on the podcast.